So this morning, Gary, by the way, welcome to our show, and thank you very much for taking the time to sit down with us as our first guest.
Thanks, Albert. No better way to start, I guess.
So here we've got an industry that produces tiles, sanitary ware, bathroom ware. They do it on a global basis, but nobody would know who you are. Absolutely no one would know who you are. And I'm talking specifically from a consumer perspective, not industry perspective. So we also like the challenge of taking a factory, which in most cases isn't the most sexy thing to promote. And we try and relate that value to them and how they benefit from it. So ceramic industries, Gary, it's not the most creative. And also it can be a bit of a search engine pain for millennials. Why this brand name?
Ceramic Industries is not a brand. And the business was founded by our chairman many, many years ago, over 40 years ago. And it made sense because the product we made was made from clay, ceramic. That's the name. But Ceramic Industries is not a brand in the mind of the consumer. Ceramic Industries is important for the B2B sector of the business, for the merchant base. Ceramic Industries is important. And the brands that we manufacture and the product we manufacture in conjunction with our retailers is more important than the brand Ceramic Industries. That's on the tile side of things. But I'm going to mention some names and some brands that we do manufacture. So Afri Porcelain, it's a red body porcelain product that's available in a number of retailers. That's ours. Kilimanjaro Tiles is ours. Metrotech are our products, all manufactured. Quadratech, all manufactured by Ceramic Industries in conjunction with the retail merchants that we work closely with. What is, however, a brand on the other side is our sanitaryware. Is better sanitary ware. So 6 out of every 10 toilets that are installed in South Africa, when I say 6, could be 5.5, but you can't get half a toilet. So 6 out of every 10 toilets that are installed in South Africa, toilets, basins, cisterns, generally come from our better sanitary ware factory based out in Krugersdorp. Really proud of that business. Sphinx Baths, Better Baths, same business. We don't brand any of that because generally there's no brand equity in a bath. But on sanitary ware, there's a lot of brand equity because the consumer then knows it's a locally manufactured product, local backup, local support. And that's more important than the imported product when you're dealing with varying water pressures, dealing with differing temperatures, dealing with a local plumber. These things are important. So we spend more time focusing on the brand equity of better sanitary ware than what we do of the tile factories.
To the retailers that purchase and stock you, you certainly are a brand. Because you're a factory as it stands here, but once you back up your product, provide service to it, have people in it that has innovation and a vision and a mission for what you want to do, obviously that starts becoming a brand. But it's an industry brand. And consumer brand, hopefully, is what we're going to try and help you to do here. So that people understand, you can't buy directly from Ceramic Industries, but now all of a sudden when you buy, you know what sits behind it and who sits behind it.
I'm going to give some of the retail names, if you don't mind.
I would, please.
You know, and you mentioned, and the retail network would be a CDM, an Ital Tile, a Top T, a Cash Build, a Tile Africa, a Builder's Warehouse, a Taltoria. Union Tiles, a Taltoria, so many smaller, the independents, a Laduma Hardware, a SI Hardware, a Rico Dico, wherever you are in the country, probably 60% of the merchants out there would carry a tile or toilet or bath from Ceramic Industries. And you don't see the name Ceramic Industries.
Yeah.
The brand equity is held in the merchant base that the consumer is buying from.
So me and you today, our challenge is to take a boring subject, and I say boring very lightly because I find very passion in it. I find huge value in those conversations, but we have to get consumers to start understanding it slightly better. And that also there's humans behind all of this. You know, it's not just machinery and software and probably AI as we develop a little bit more forward, but there's humans behind this that drive strategies. So Gary, just before I kick off onto the questions and stuff, just give us a quick insight. What does Gary do on a daily basis for Ceramic Industries?
For Ceramic Industries, commercial director, sales and marketing director, as you said, there's a number of different roles. I make my own tea, I make my own coffee, get around and do what needs to be done. And I think the important part is I get in front of the customers. In our case, the customer is the merchant, not necessarily the consumer. And it's trying to understand what turns the consumer on, relating it back to the customer, and seeing how we can package what we need to package for the customer and ultimately the consumer. So I guess that sort of encompasses what I do on a daily basis, whether it be understanding the fashion, the design, the production planning, the demand planning, the conditions, what's happening with load shedding, where are we with clay, are our glazes coming in, have we got the right packaging? It encompasses all of that. I think the most time in a day these days is spent motivating people. We have a challenging environment out there at this stage. And to keep the team motivated, the team that services Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Malawi, to the team that is servicing Lesotho, Bloemfontein, KZN, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, trying to keep them motivated in these times is challenging. And that's what I do on a daily basis.
Something you said to me very interesting also is consumer spend and consumer mindsets in the last 3 years and where they what they prioritize to spend onto, what they prioritize to do financially in their households. And one of the things that I thought about is if you say ceramic tiles or ceramic, you relate that normally to a tile. But in your own words, ceramic has so much more applications. Just explain to us quickly what is ceramics.
So ceramic is a product that's made from clay. Whether it be tiles, whether it be bathroomware, meaning basins, pedestals, cisterns, pans, whether it be tableware, anything made from clay is ceramic. There are, however, misconceptions in the market with regards to porcelain. So porcelain is also ceramic. But porcelain, in South African terms, is something that has got a white body. As opposed to the real terminology, porcelain is to do it relates to the water absorption of the product. So for me, ceramic has different legs. It could be a ceramic wall tile. It could be a ceramic floor tile. It could be a ceramic paver. It could be a ceramic toilet. It could be a ceramic... It just depends. So that is what ceramic means to me and not necessarily the consumer.
Because to us, when you think about tiles, and we'll dive into it because obviously tiles, we think floor tiles,
yes,
you know, home tiles. Yep. Let's say that's a relatable term. But then there's roofing tiles, there's wall tiles and different applications. And to us, it's probably I go into the retail store, I see what I like based on design, maybe based on size, and the details behind that sort of become secondary. You know, it's the first visual effect.
Yeah.
But this is the exciting part to me is that when you look at that product, to have a slightly deeper and not all the technical understanding, but just to have the understanding that behind that one tile or one block is so much passion, innovation, thinking, keeping up the whole time with new ways, making it efficient, if cost effective. But we should be concerned with the quality of that application. That's really where consumers are interested in.
Yeah.
The stuff, you know, will it last 6 months? When it chips, can I replace this tile as an example? Does the color grades change as an example? So just give us an idea when it comes to the quality. What is consumer supposed to look at when it comes to ceramics and the quality? When it comes, what? How do you choose a tile as Gary going into the stores?
Albert, I'm glad you put it that way. So let me try to make it as simplistic as possible. And for the purpose of our conversation, I'm going to refer to ceramic as floor tiles, not necessarily wall tiles, not necessarily sanitary ware. I'm going to focus on floor tiles in this case. Now, from a floor, in a floor tile, you get a colored body floor tile, you get a full-bodied floor tile. A full-bodied tile means that if the tile chips, you won't notice it because it's the same color on the surface as what is through the body.
Okay.
That's the full body. A colored body, generally, if you've got a creamy finish on the top, a beigey finish, an ivory finish, your body will have a similar color. If you have a taupe or terracotta color, it will be a browny terracotta color body. If you have a gray or charcoal color, your body will be gray or charcoal. Those are the three sort of colors that you go with. The tile is, the full body tile is generally more expensive than a colored body or a normal body, a through body. So the consumer would potentially look at a colored body because it's a little bit less expensive than the full body. You still see a chip. I'll see a chip because I'm in the industry. You probably wouldn't notice a chip if you've got a colored body or a little flake in the tile. I would notice it, and probably most people involved in the industry. Now, that is probably maybe 10% of all product production is colored body and full body. If you go to the general product that is manufactured, it's a clay. It's got an engobe, we call it an engobe, which is almost like a sealant. It stops the color of the body coming through. And then you have the decoration of the tile. And the decoration of the tile varies. Some like matte tiles, some like shiny tiles, some like pattern tiles, some like wood look tiles. There's a lot of knowledge and experience that goes into deciding what is the right tile for the size of tile that is purchased. I believe at Ceramic Industries, we have probably the world's best tile designer. The ladies who work within our team have got so much knowledge and experience. They understand what works in the Eastern Cape doesn't necessarily work in the Limpopo province. The Europeans have a different understanding of Africa to what we have.
Yeah.
And I think that's critical for where we play in the world. The red body or the red color, the rosa color that works in Europe, doesn't work in South Africa. And what works in the Western Cape doesn't work in the Eastern. We have local intimate knowledge of understanding that. And I believe we have two of the best designers in the world in our business in South Africa. So once you've decided on what the tile looks like, and you as a consumer will decide what the tile looks like, it's important to understand the hardness of the glaze. So if you've got a shopping center that you want to put the product in, you would want to go with a PEI rating of 4 or 5.
Heavy duty and
heavy duty, yeah. Okay. Porcelain Dynamic Institute, the PEI rating. So anything that's got a high rating, you would want to put into a shopping center.
High traffic footfall?
High traffic footfall. In a domestic use, homes, anything with a high 3 to 4, generally suitable. So it's important to understand what the PEI rating of the tile is when you're deciding what tile you want to purchase for your application. I suppose that's one of the key things. The hardness of your glaze is important as well. If you're in the reception area and you're seeing people dropping keys, dropping cups and things like that, the hardness of the glaze is also important, determines the scratchability.
Like a kitchen environment, isn't it?
Kitchen environment. Generally, you know, a 3 or 4 in that area, PEI rating 3 or 4 is good. And a high hardness of glaze. You want to have a hard glaze. You don't want to have a soft glaze because it walks off or it can chip and it can flake. Around swimming pools, you have your slip resistant.
Yeah.
So you want to ensure that the tile that you put around the pools on walkways, on public walkways. It has a slip-resistant test that's done and a high rating so that you don't slip when you're getting out the pool. You don't slip when someone's cleaning the floor. That's important. And then the modulus of rupture, the hardness of the tile, that's important for you because you don't want to put a soft tile on the floor knowing that it could potentially break if there's movement of the substrate, movement of difference between cold and hot weather. The hardness of the body is important. Now, we have a misconception in South Africa that the hardness of the body is based on the thickness of the tile. It's not. The thickness or thinness of the tile is based on the technology that you're using to make the tile. But ceramic, we invest a lot in technology with the intention of looking to become eco-friendly across all, which I'm sure we're going to get to in the conversation. Yeah. We look at having products that are eco-friendly without reducing the hardness of the body. And the hardness goes to the amount of pressure that can be applied by square centimeter. So, and the thickness of the body has a limited influence on the hardness of the modulus of rupture of the tile. So I think the key things to take away from the question is once you've decided on the tile from the finish and the look that you want, what is the hardness of the glaze, the PEI rating? Can it be used in the application that I want to? The scratchability of it, the hardness of the body, those are key for us. And then if you look at the size of tile, a lot of rooms in South Africa are they small expanse areas. So you've probably got a 3x3, 4x4 room. And the dynamic of our consumer is that they generally do not have the affordability to do the whole house at once. So they'll do one room. And sometimes they want to have a different tile in each room, but they don't want to have a lot of wastage.
Yeah.
So they'll come to the retail stores with the size of the room that they're looking to revamp, and the consumer will engage with the store people, the individuals in the stores, and ask them, what is going to give me the least amount of waste, the least amount of offcuts? Because it's critical in deciding what the size of the tile is that they want to use in their home.
It also comes down to the installer.
Absolutely.
And I would almost say it comes down to the installer.
Absolutely.
Whether he has the skill, the capacity, the discipline, and also depending on whether you go 50-50, 80-20, whether you go herringbone. We knew when we made a selection in tiles with any business, the tile quality, when we talked about the application, wet environment, heavy duty, foot traffic, etc. The second part is look and feel. Do I want a seamless floor? Do I want that gap in between? Because then grout becomes an issue as well. What grout do you use? How to clean it and maintain it? And we have a beautiful tip from you on that as well. So we won't dive into that too much, but people have to be aware that the tile is one part of it, but then you have to get the professionalism and service providers to come and actually do the installation.
Absolutely. So in some of the more developed markets, the installer costs as much as the tile.
Yeah.
So in Europe, Australia, the installer, and the bigger the tile, the more expensive it is to install. And the reason behind it is that the tiler is actually a professional. He goes through a trade test. He does his apprenticeship. She does her apprenticeship. The tools that the installers use are phenomenal. There's vibration on tools, so on tiles, so that the adhesive spreads correctly. There's gaps that are put in. There's expansion joints. In South Africa, we're just not there yet.
No.
And I don't think it's only the tiling industry that it's there. We see it the same with sanitary installation. We see with drywalling. We see with windows. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in that sector. And we have a tiling academy where we support local tilers to come in and train them and upskill them to ensure that they are able to give you a a product that you'll be proud of and you'll be happy to live with for 7 to 10 years, which is about the life cycle of tiles these days.
To be a good service provider takes a lot of effort and time, and it's not always as feasible because people want that brilliant service, but they want to pay the average of 75 rand a square meter to install, or 60 rand a square meter to install. Where you, if you start talking about service providers that know what they're doing, it's 90 to 120. Am I right in the ballpark there, roughly, Gary?
The 90 to 120 rand is probably for a decent quality tiler.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking 75 rand, that number's unheard of these days.
Yeah.
There's sites that I've heard of where the guys are paying 25 rand a square meter, 50 rand a square meter. And you should
ask
if you're paying that for a tile that's a floor that you're going to live with for 7 to 10 years, you should be questioning yourself to say, am I prepared for what the outcome is going to be? And it cannot always be the manufacturer's fault,
yeah,
and the tiler's fault, because you have chosen to pay that rate. So what can you expect?
Yeah.
On top of that, Albert, what often happens is the consumer will say, I've got the tiler. The tiler needs to come and install because he is the professional. But you've knocked him down to 50 rand a square meter. You say, come and do the installation in my home. And the tiler often cannot read what's on the box, cannot read the instruction. So you say to them, as a consumer, you'll say, I want you to do this, that, this pattern. And then you go and you come home, and at the end of the day, it's not what you want. And then it's everybody else's fault. And this is something we see in the market all the time.
Yeah.
The consumer has bargained down to the bottom, hasn't given the correct instructions to the tiler. The tiler hasn't done what's expected, and then it's the manufacturer's fault as to why the consumer hasn't got what they wanted.
And I would say that if you are going to be renovating your home or your complex or whatever you're going to be doing with it, for you to take an hour and actually listen to all of this for 10-year investment and yield, because like I said to you, I installed your tiles in my house. Now, there was instructions on it. I had an idea of what the gap must be in the middle, but if you actually look at the box, it tells you what style it's meant to be or what style it can do, and then you physically actually print pictures of how it's supposed to come together. So again, just look at these things. And again, I'm not judging people that's got a money budget at the moment. It's all of us are feeling the pinch.
Absolutely.
But rather than wait to get it done right, we all would believe, I want an Italian tile. Now, I know you have Italian influence. You have Italian equipment and innovation and equipment that helps you produce what you do. We've obviously learned a lot from each other. But why has got this Italian tile stigma, which I'm not going to maybe shock a few people. It is certainly not out of Italy. A lot of these, and maybe in the old days it used to work that way, but even the tiles that you would think comes from Italy could be an Eastern product. Why is that perception still there that tiles from Italy is great? Now, if you think about whiskey, sorry for everybody. Yeah,
it's early for me to think about. I know, but I can.
But whiskey, you would traditionally go Irish Scotland.
Yeah. Okay?
But whiskey of the year is one out of Japan. Whiskey of the year is one out of South Africa. So that segment has changed slightly. That other people also produce great whiskeys, but I think from a tile perspective, we are for the first time pushing it a little bit to say, is it still that segment? I mean, are we still supposed to think that way?
I'm going to answer. I'm glad you touched on the Italian side of it. It's important to understand that our equipment is Italian.
Yeah.
90% of our the important parts of the factory, generally Italian.
Yeah.
We obviously use local construction, roof sheeting,
yeah,
cement, you know, generally locally manufactured material. In the past, there was Italian flair. So the Italian flair certainly has a place in the market, certainly does. But globalization has shortened that Italian flair. So in the past, we would go to Italian shows, we'd go to Spanish shows, we'd go and have a look at the product. We'd see the latest punch, profile, texture, glaze, finishes. We'd have a look at it. It's beautiful, nice, really exciting. And we'd then try to replicate that in South Africa. So what would happen is we'd get the tile sent over to South Africa. We tried to match the designs. We tried to do a lot of the Italian flair in South Africa. Take note what I said earlier on. The Italian flair, the Italian design, is not necessarily what us as South Africans want.
Mm.
We want something that suits us. So the Italians did a fantastic job in promoting made in Italy, because they were the leaders when it comes to tile design, style, and fashion. And give it to them. They've done a phenomenal job. They've gone with larger format tiles. They've gone with different profiles, different colored bodies, different structures, different textures. However, with globalization and the internet, that time of importing the product, replicating it in South Africa, that time has reduced to that.
Okay.
So if we get a design, a digital design from Europe to say, this is what it can look like, we can replicate that product in South Africa within a 3-month period. We might not get it to look exactly like the Italian product.
But to the common eye, wouldn't
it? But to the common eye, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to make a controversial statement. If you have tiles in your home, the brand equity, and listen carefully what I'm going to say, the brand equity that Italian tiles have on a global basis. If you have tiles in your home and you invite guests in and they walk in and they say, wow, Albert, these tiles are beautiful. Generally, there's two responses. Most people in the market do not understand what those two responses are. If somebody says to you, these tiles are beautiful, the one response is, thank you. The other response is, thank you, they're Italian. Those are the two responses. That's what a great job the Italians have done.
Yes.
Nobody turns around and says, wow, thank you, they are Ceramic Industries. Wow, they are Samka Tiles. Because to the consumer, they say, what does it mean?
Yeah.
So the factory that goes behind that, the machines that are going, the consumers, and we're okay with it.
Yeah.
The consumers really don't care whether they were made in the Samka factory or the Vitro factory or the NCI factory or the Griffin factory or the Pegasus factory or some of our competitors or the Johnson's factory. Yeah. Or they don't care. The consumer just wants to know that they've got a beautiful Italian tile or they've got a beautiful tile. Oh. That's the difference.
We spoke about now, just in principle, the application of tiles and how to maintain it. And you gave us quite a good tip when we had a quick technical glitch here for a second. So just take us through that again.
Yeah, so Albert, the local Islak is critical for us. If we look at our business, we try to source clay from quarries that are as close as possible to our factories. It's critical for us from a supply chain point of view and to ensure that we support the communities in which we operate. So we are key stakeholders in the communities. We support schools, we support football teams. We have a foundation, that the Ital Tile Ceramic Foundation. We support so many different communities in which we operate, and we're very proud of that. But going to the question on a little tip. So we find that there's a misnomer around the marketplace that you need to use lots and lots and lots of different cleaning detergents in order to clean your floor tiles. Generally, if you're cleaning your tile with a bucket of hot water, it generally will clean off. Generally, it will clean off. If you put enough elbow grease into it and it's a clean mop, you're generally fine. But if that doesn't work, there's nothing wrong with putting a little bit of white vinegar in a bucket with hot water and generally it takes care of most stains and dirt on the floor. And that's not only with tiles, in your bath as well. If you've got a dirt mark in your bath, little bit of vinegar, hot water, cleans it off. Taps, vinegar, hot water, generally cleans it. Whereas what we generally do is we put a big detergent, some of the big brand detergents into it, something that's got a real chemical composition that actually damages the acrylic, or it will damage the chrome plating on a tap, or it will damage the glaze. And because we don't know, we continue doing it. But white vinegar, hot water, generally cleans most things.
Well, thank you for that tip. I'm sure everybody will appreciate that. And when you talk about serving the communities, and I hope somebody listens to this when I say, so you've got 7 factories. Now, if I go to that community today and ask them about ceramic industries, there will be such a different answer than asking somebody that has no idea who you are. Because they will feel, well, this is what keeps the community going. We make an employment out of this. We generate income from this. They are good to the community. They help maintain economic footprint within the community in which we serve. There's a far more relatability to the areas in which you serve than outside of that. And again, we know that everybody's busy. We know that you have concerns at your home. You're going through things in your business. And we're not asking you to give us all your brain power, but to consciously know that when you make that purchase at a retail level, it has an immediate and direct traceability to where it serves and where it benefits from. And that's the consciousness that I think is actually not too much to ask of consumers. That the idea for us is that when we go and open up our fridge, we can almost say, oh, it's, Johnny is the guy that comes and delivers for it, or that farm is where that happens. And it's the same thing in our homes, the tiles that we sit on, the tiles that, you know, I know it's just tiles, and it's almost, what's the emotional connection? But we braai around there. We gather families around it, and that, you know, listen, don't you, just so you know, this factory, these tiles that I have here, I can physically trace it back to the economic footprint and benefit that it serves South Africa, the communities in which it serves. And the biggest thing for me, and I think it's maybe time I bring this in, is that we are not saying, if we are not innovative, we don't offer good products, we can't back it up in service, we have no passion for what we do, don't support us then. But we are innovative at what we do. We try and strive to be as cost effective as we possibly can. We have to be sustainable. You take your ecological footprint that you have with the factories, you take that very seriously, and what that means to the environment in which you serve. These are the things, just like everybody that buys these tiles, they go to their work and they try and make things better. They try and do it with love and passion. That's exactly what's happening at factory level, but it's a faceless business, because all we see is the website, the factories from a distance, but we don't always understand the inner workings and the hard work through our hands that happens in these factories. And that these skills, you don't want to just lose these skills. Gary, if you think about lockdown, when the world shut down, I can tell you now, if you haven't realized by then that it's very easy for Africa just to be turned off. You know, we are such a small footprint in the greater scheme of economics in this world, that all of a sudden, if you didn't have local suppliers on a lot of the things that we do, we would have been in a far worse position than we did. You know, just a quick thing, Lasher Tools, they make K knives for the sugar industry. When lockdown happened, if a farmer has to yield his farm, you can't wait 6 months to say, okay, I'll take it out of the ground then. It has a season and a time that you need to cut where it's ripe and it's ready to go. You can't change that. You can't influence that. That's nature. And over years with farming and et cetera, just like in factories, we can control it a little bit with innovation and technology. But we had to go out of that environment and go and start making product for us to have a sugar product that has millions of function sugar. We think of it in our coffee, but almost every product that you see and touch has a part of sugar in it. And sometimes from a health perspective, sometimes from a functionality perspective, there were local people that can go into factories, make that happen and make sure we still get our yields out. And this is what I want consciousness to, for the consumers to understand, that these are not factories where people are sitting in fancy offices the whole time, living fancy lives and lifestyles. We are just as hard working, relatable to the things that you do on a daily basis, but just in an industry that perhaps is very faceless, because the retailers are really your face. You know, that's where the experience gets created.
Absolutely. Now, when we talk about lockdown, it was an instrumental change in our business and in the South African market. And let's keep it into the South African context. So when government allowed certain industries to be opened, ours was not one of those that were allowed to be opened. We were unable to go and continue manufacturing. But the retail network were allowed to stay open.
Yeah.
When government allowed industry to open up, we were only allowed to bring 30% of our workforce back. Now, running the machines that we run and the factories that we run, you can't run it on 30% capacity. At no stage did we expect government to come up with that logic. So I ended up doing, for the seven different factories, I ended up doing eight different revisions of the startup plans as to what we're going to start up with. We had to then take into consideration which retailers and which sector of the market would still be open at that time. So it was a case of opening up and making the product that the retail network required at that particular time. And it was critical. We couldn't open up all the factories at all the time. It was incremental changes, and who do we bring back and what do we bring back? It took probably 6 months to come back into full capacity, full production capacity. And then the market were buying anything that was available, because global supply chains were disrupted.
Correct.
Bringing it back down to the local is lacquer dynamic. What we didn't take into consideration as South Africans and the market that we serve is, what does our supply chain look like to bring back to manufacturing? In our perspective, pallets and boxes are critical in the supply chain of tiles and sanitary ware into the market. If our supply chain doesn't have boxes and they don't have pallets, how do we get our material into the market? How do we get our products into the market? You can't load tiles box by box on the back of a 34-ton truck. You just cannot do it.
It's not very time and cost effective.
You're only going to get half the capacity, a third of the capacity. So it was critical for us to ensure that our supply chain and our trusted local partners also had the ability to supply the boxes, the plastic, the pallets, in order to get our products out into the market at the same time. And it's, so that was post-COVID or post the COVID startup time. Load shedding has taught us to realize as well that you cannot only be reliant on that one source. You have to mitigate your risk and have a number of other different sources as well. So I needed to share that with you because I think it was a learning for all of us in South Africa that if we can get a local manufacturing industry working well, the opportunities are massive. But when we don't, we're in trouble.
Gary, I'm so glad you shared that with us. And if I can just take it a step or add on to that, what people don't realize is that, again, just reminding you, we're not asking for emotional support. We're asking for support or conscious support because we are the best at what we do, because we are cost effective. And just think about the benefits here. We buy a tile, we support ceramic industries. No, you've got raw materials and people that rely on your capacity. They've got trucks, administrative offices. Their buildings have to be maintained, painted. Your building has to be maintained your factory machinery. There's so many third parties that's involved in this downline economy of a factory or a raw material supplier that your footprint is far greater than just, let's say, selfishly, your factories in which you serve.
Absolutely.
And that's massive. And we forget that. And you thinking one tile purchase, you can literally go home and know that you made an impact across tens of thousands. Because if you take, let's say, 1,200 people across your company from a Southern Africa perspective, that you can multiply by 10, 20, depending on which calculation you use, with the effect of that economy later on. And by doing this, before you know it, we can get ourselves to become a sustainable manufacturing environment, which not only serves the local market, but also globally.
You know, the local is critical for us. If we look at our business, we try to source clay from quarries that are as close as possible to our factories. It's critical for us from a supply chain point of view and to ensure that we support the communities in which we operate. So we are key stakeholders in the communities. We support schools, we support football teams. We have a foundation, that the Ital Tile Ceramic Foundation. We support so many different communities in which we operate, and we're very proud of that.
When it comes to factories, you need units. Everything changes when it comes to put throughput of a factory. If you have short time, it has impact cost on you. If you can take your factory and you can say, I can make 1 million tiles today, as an example. If you get 1 million tile, it has a cost-effective benefit to the end consumer and the people that it serves. Am I right in saying all of that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when it comes to the downstream and the upstream value chain, in our business, we send out between 70 and 75 superlinks per day. Superlinks of trucks, of product going out. That's a driver, and it's a logistics business. If we look at the clay that's coming in, and the communities that we serve that have to mine the clay, it's transport bringing the clay in. The glaze that comes in, the retail network we support, the retail network has to be selling that product onto someone, whether it be a Baldwin Properties, whether it be a Cozy Homes, whether it be a Robbie Properties, whether it be a M&L Construction, M&T Construction, you know, wherever it is, It's been installed. Whether it be a Redefined property or Growth Point property, it's probably being installed in that area. It could be an Eastgate shopping center. It could be owned by Liberty. It could be owned by so many. That's where our product is going. And all of the, it could be a Checkers shopping center. It could be Mr. Price Home. It could be a liquor store. It could be Dis-Chem. It could be Clicks. Could be Woolies, it could be Pick and Pay. The names that I've mentioned to you, Albert, are locally lacquer South African companies. And look at the value chain that we're creating. Adhesive that gets installed, that's used to.
Yeah.
It's all a South African value chain. If we get that right, so much opportunity for us.
So what's the most misinformed statement from customers and consumers in your game?
The misinformed for me, and probably for the entire industry, is the terminology porcelain. And I think just seeing your face when we were talking about porcelain, it certainly made you aware, or it assisted you in being aware of the terminology porcelain and ceramic.
Yeah.
We have a perception that white-colored clay is porcelain, and it's not. The porosity of the product determines whether it's a porcelain or not. We have different classifications of what porcelain is in South Africa. In the next 4 months, we will be producing a porcelain tile in our factory in Vereeniging that will compete with some of the global white body porcelain products with a water absorption rate of less than 0.5%. And we don't talk much about it because the consumer is so used to having porcelain tiles being white body. Can I expand a little bit on that?
You may, of course.
So there was a misconception that a porcelain tile was white body and a white box. There was that misconception. And the consumer didn't understand that it was to do it. It had all to do with the water absorption. So post COVID, I really made a bold decision. Global supply chains were disrupted. Product couldn't come in from the east. Costs of bringing in product were exorbitant and increasing on a daily basis, and the market was pulling.
Purple patch.
It was a great time. So our merchant base that we deal with said, your shiny material from the Griffin factory, we can't buy it because it's a brown box and the consumer wants a white box. And it has to have 1.44 square meters in a box. So I said, okay, I'll go and make the bold move. And they wouldn't go with the Ecotec body, which is, it's efficient, it saves gas emissions, it saves clay, it transports better, whole lot of benefits. I made the bold statement and said, we will make porcelain tiles, white body, shiny glaze, and put it in a white box. And instead of our normal branding, the branding will be porcelain tile. Because that's what the consumer wanted to see. We haven't changed from then. 3 years later, we're making the same product. We're making it in a white box. It says porcelain tile on there, and it's got 2.1 square meters in a box. So we changed we listened to what the merchant was saying. We adapted some of the situation. We did what was right for the business, for the community, for the supply chain. And it was a win-win for everyone. And that misconception of porcelain made us think differently about how we're going to approach supplying this shiny porcelain material into the market.
How do you think tiles have revolutionized since the inception or development of tiles in the everyday home or the everyday space?
I'm going to have to take it back to Italy at some stage, and then I'll take it to where we are at the moment. So the Italians have done a phenomenal job in revolutionizing the space from a water absorption, porosity, frost resistant, size of tile, thinness of tile, thickness of tile. They generally lead in that dynamic. And they lead because they're so close to the manufacturers of the equipment. So they work very closely with the manufacturers to get the right finish, the right texture, the right bodies. And that is integral. That drives where the market goes. And that will continue, in my opinion, it will continue driving where the market goes. Let's put it back into the South African industry now. So in the South African space, we were limited by the size of tile we could make due to the equipment that we had and the support that we had on that equipment. You think of it, if you've got an Italian manufacturer of equipment and they've supplied equipment to South Africa and you don't have local support, you have to wait for a month before the guy can get a visa to come to South Africa and support. You can't phone the guy. Technology has changed that. You can do a video call. The guy can assist you in Europe to fix the equipment in South Africa via a video call or Google Lens which is the innovation that we put in our factory in order to get the support and the backup that's needed. So that was an inhibiting factor for growth in the market. there was influence from the East, and the influence from the East was saying, this market is consuming, there's a shortage of homes, so we will continue to build homes, and as we continue to build homes, the demand will increase for specific types of tiles. And that influence from the East resulted in another factory being built in South Africa. As we have progressed now, when the market has progressed, we have to try to keep up with the influence from Europe as well as the influence from the East in order to satisfy local consumer demand. So size of tile, finish of tile will evolve based on the consumer's exposure to global trends and global designs. Something that is becoming very important in the local market now is the closeness of the tile. So the gap between the tile.
Yeah.
People want a seamless floor.
Yeah.
So they want to put a 2 millimeter or 3 millimeter or 5 millimeter. 5 millimeter is frowned upon these days.
Yeah.
They want to put a 2 or 3 millimeter space on the floor without realizing that not all tiles are rectified.
Yes.
And what a rectified tile is means that it's been almost cut to a particular specific size.
Precision.
A precision.
Yeah.
However, in the Western Cape, as an example, some consumers want that. Other consumers want the old Cape style look where they want a 10 millimeter gap because it's a terracotta tile, it's a clay tile. So the market has evolved, but there's still certain niches that you have to be mindful of when you build a factory, when you put the innovation in. And then you have to look at what the factory is built for. Not all factories are built to rectify product. Not all factories are built for large formats. And you have to look at where the market is. You have to look at what you're building. You have to look at what the factory is capable of and manage that in order to satisfy demand.
Anything that you can share with us that is a trade secret?
The real trade secret is you don't know whether it's our tile on the floor or not.
Or not. Well, hopefully they'll know soon.
I'm going to retract my first answer.
Yeah.
Is there a trade secret? And yes, there is a trade secret, but it boils down to this question now. The trade secret is that everybody in our business enjoys profit share. As long as you meet the profit share requirements, everybody benefits from profit share. So the 10% of the profits of the business are shared with the employees, with our team.
Yeah.
They contribute and 10% of it is shared with them. It's something that was instituted by our chairman many, many years ago, and it was a game changer. I say it was a game changer then. It still is a game changer now. The real benefit, and I'll give you a practical example. In our site in Hammanskraal, a few years ago, our biggest problem or challenge in the business was that we had insufficient space to build carports for the employees who benefited from profit share and purchased vehicles. We didn't have space to build carports for the guys who were able to buy cars and bring them to work.
Yeah. I mean, wow.
But what a beautiful
problem. What a beautiful problem, but also not so foreseeable, you know, in your planning.
Something that was overlooked is the fact that people could buy cars, not on HP, people could buy cars with their profit share and drive to work.
Yeah.
Beautiful problem to have.
Those people, and I'm talking from the first person that greets you into the factory, from the one that takes the forklift and drives the raw material to the plant, each one of them is a contributing factor towards the overall success of the business.
Absolutely.
Going back to my house today, I'm just looking at everything differently. And again, it is so important because when somebody says to me, oh, but time and time, and I say, give me your social media quickly. Then I go on time spent for the day. And I do this a lot with a lot of people around me. And I say, okay, so an average of 2 hours a day, you're on social media, flicking through absolute no value add to your life. And I'm saying every now and again, you get a good advert that draws your attention for a product that's good, or, you know, maybe some drama about the family that you can read and skin it about at home. But these are the type of stuff that if we just take a few minutes, listen to some of the conversations and answers, we would be more informed when we do our next renovation, when we do our next purchasing. And a lot of people invest in properties. You know, understand what you're putting in there. If you invest in property and there's rental people in there, you probably want a more heavy-duty application than, let's say, your personal home. And the last thing I will finish on my side is that Donnie and I, a partner of mine in the next business, we always used to say, when it comes to a home, it's different. When we source for a butchery, when you're building a butchery, it's a far more or less emotional purchase, because you talk about practicality and longevity, you know, and that can it still look good 3 years from now. But when it comes to your home, it's a far softer approach, because this is what you see every day. It's what you live and work in every day. And one thing I will say, what I really enjoyed about today is that when it comes to cleaning and maintaining these tiles, we got an incredible tip from you today. And Gary and I were saying that it's the mop killer, you know, these rougher tiles that you see on the outside when you don't want slip tiles, is that how to clean it. And there is going to be a little bit of mop residue that stays behind in all of that. Don't panic about any of that stuff. We learned a lot more about the everyday tile that we see and engage with, but perhaps we'll give it a second look. I want to thank you, Gary, and the leadership there, the owners and shareholders, and that's now all of your staff there, for driving the South African economy, for innovating, and for making this to be so incredibly forward-thinking and so proud that we have a company like this in our backyard that supports us, produces for us, works with us, localizes everything that they do, and then empowering every little piece, every human that's within your business. From all of us, and for those that appreciate it especially, thank you to everybody involved within your business and everybody that supports you, the retailers, the people that merchandise it, the people that install it with love and compassion. We thank you for what you guys are doing, and for those that are riding the wave and for keeping steady, thank you very much for everything. And thank you for your time today, Gary.
Thanks, Albert. Thank you. It's humbling, the words that you've used there. We wouldn't be who we are and what we are without the support from all of our suppliers, all of our team that work within the business, all of our merchants that we work with, the retail partners that buy our product, the proudly South African companies that install our product. We wouldn't be who we are without their support. And then from you guys, I mean, I think this has been been a fantastic conversation, something to open eyes and open doors. And I agree with you that if we do spend a little bit more time as South Africans when we're doing a renovation, if we just spend a little bit more time searching about what we want to do, I think the industry does change. So thank you for today. It's been really lekker.
What a pleasure, Gary. All the best.